Good afternoon, and thank you for waiting. Diehards, I suppose all of you are staying in hotels, and all of us have one thing in common. Not ladies in the room, but we have sugar. So I'll be talking about a story of how growers manage a disease called Sarcospora leaf spot, or sugar beet, which was a nightmare for them at one time. Sugar that we get either comes from sugarcane, mostly from tropical countries, or in the U.S., we have both sugarcane and we have sugar beet. Sugarcane, you get it from the stem. Sugar beet, you get it not for the green leaves, but from the roots. In Minnesota and North Dakota, we produce 60% of the total U.S. sugar beet production. So this is big business. The most limiting factor is a disease called Sarcospora leaf spot, which is caused by a fungus. Initially starts with small, innocuous spots on the leaves, but eventually destroy the whole leaves. And as you know, the leaves are the photosynthetic factories of the plant. Start with the oldest leaves first, and as most of you are probably of my age, who are the most productive people? The older guys or the young guns? The older folks. The young ones just want us to die so they can get our inheritance. So with sugar beet, when these older leaves die, you will lose a lot of sugar. The plant wants to survive, so what does it do? It starts to produce new leaves. Where does it get the energy from to produce the new leaves? From the roots, where all the energy was stored. So this disease will reduce your yield as well as your quality. What kind of conditions is favorable for this disease? Just like peanuts, warm and wet conditions, just think Florida. When you have those, and believe you me, in North Dakota and Minnesota, we do see some warm and wet conditions. In 1998, we had an epidemic where growers lost over $98 million. Our fields were looking then not like turnip greens and peanut greens, but like Virginia tobacco fields, brown from the disease. And the reason why that happened was we had just a few fungicides. They were used a lot, so we had problems with benzimidazole resistance and tin resistance. So all the stars were lined up for a severe epidemic in 1998. Growers in the southern part of the area sprayed some of them 12 times. Of course, in our area, sometimes you don't have any other hobby other than driving your tractor. So some growers had a nice time spraying 12 times, but it wasn't very effective. What did we do? Of course, this is what the fields will look like. All the leaves are lost. Once you lose your leaves, you're losing your money. This is 1999, the year after the epidemic. As you can see, this is a plot trial where we did not inoculate the plot. There was so much disease that the untreated check had a rating of 8.9 on a 1 to 9 scale. 1 mean that the leaves were healthy. 9 means that the leaves were all killed and you're having regrowth of leaves. When you have that situation, you're getting just about 4,000 pounds of recoverable sucrose. Triphenylethyl hydroxide was not working very well compared to the untreated check. That was one of the labeled fungicides that we have. And the reason was the fungus had developed resistance to triphenylethyl hydroxide. Similarly to benlate and manzit was never effective. I'll show you a picture of the untreated check, and the next picture is of benlate in alternation with manzit applied 4 times in total. So these were not working. So what we tried instead was a product called Eminent, which was not labeled. It was a triazole, and we literally begged EPA to use this compound to give us a Section 18 or a special exemption. We found that this compound by itself was working very well. It reduced the leaf spot and it had significantly higher yield. But we could not recommend to the growers to use 4 straight applications of Eminent, or else we will end up in a situation that we had with tin and the benzimidazole. We will have resistance. So we said, okay, let's try to alternate tin with Eminent. When we did that, we had a big reduction in leaf spot as well as a high increase in yield. But we found that if we put the Eminent first, followed by the tin, then came back again with Eminent and tin, we had even better disease control and higher recoverable sucrose. And the reason that this alternation here worked better was triphenylethyl hydroxide is a protectant. That means when you apply it to the plants, it doesn't, if you have some spots there already, it does not control it. Whereas Eminent, which is also called tetraconazole, has what you call kickback effect. If you have a few spots, It's good enough that it will have curative effects and control the disease if it's there in small amounts. So the recommendation was, this is a picture, if you use tin first, followed by eminent, you will see some brown leaves in between. Whereas if you start with eminent first, there's less brown leaves, much better control, and higher yield. This led us to 1999, we were telling our growers, make sure you scout your field, and most times this disease will come in just about row closure, around July 4th. So they have to make their first fungicide application either at row closure or just as soon as they see spots, and rotate this eminent with Supertin at 14 days interval. Once they did that, they'll have excellent control. What happened between 1999 and 2005? We continued asking for exemption for eminent. EPA was always telling us, well, you need to provide more data to show it's needed. And if you have new compounds, especially the strobilurins, you should use those and not having eminent. Well, we went to EPA and we said, we do not like coming to you. If we shall start using this compound here, it will take the place of this one here, and strobilurins are more likely to have resistance than the triazoles. Fortunately, they listened to us, and what helped us was the people who won a headline was BASF. They stood to gain the most because around 2004, 2005, we were making three applications, two of eminent and one of tin. If EPA didn't give us a Section 18 for eminent, the BASF company will have two headline and one tin. For the people who are selling this product, they will be making a lot of money. They decided to just say, go ahead and give eminent a Section 18, and the growers will use one eminent, one tin, and one headline. That's what they did. We didn't sit down and do nothing else. We tried other compounds, and later on we had other triazoles, including Inspire, which is difenconazole, and Proline, which is prothioconazole, another triazole. What did we find? After the growers realized they were having newer and effective fungicide, they stopped using tin for several years. They were just using more or less eminent and headline, a triazole and a strobilurin. What did that do? That killed or removed a lot of the isolates that were resistant to tin. So by about 2005, when we started to use tin, it was just as effective as a newer fungicide. So you could use a tin, an eminent, and a headline in a rotation, and that will give you excellent control of the disease as well as really high yields. In inoculated plots, and I say inoculated, artificially inoculated plots now, because by around 2005, subsequently, if I did not inoculate my plots, I will not get disease. And this was because the growers were doing such a good job of controlling the disease that the inoculum pressure was getting lower and lower. So in disease condition where I inoculate, you can see that if you don't do anything, you will only get about $779 per acre. If you have a lot of disease and you use fungicides, you can get about $309 more after you will have paid for your fungicide compared to if you didn't do anything. Now remember I just said the growers are doing an excellent job, fields are doing better. I wanted first of all to find out which fungicides were working, so we'll use the worst case situation of using inoculated plots. But I also wanted to tell the growers what was happening in their fields. So I also did trials whereby I did not inoculate. So this was a non-treated, non-inoculated check. And as you can see, there was no leaf spot. Now some people are saying use fungicides. They'll make things look greener, and the greener you'll probably get more money. So let's see what happened. And they also had a specific date, sometime in August, the 25th to be exact. So this was headline, applied one time August 25th. There was no disease. This is Proline, one time August 25th, no leaf spot. And this here was my recommendation. If there were leaf spot, then you will have applied fungicide. There was no leaf spot, no application. When you compare your yield in terms of tons per acre, your sugar concentration, or your recovered sucrose, there was no advantage or no significant difference between applying a fungicide and not applying a fungicide. So between 2005 to 2010, my recommendation was use fungicides only when necessary. That is, if you have disease. Initially at first symptoms, and then subsequently when you have symptoms and the conditions are favorable. All our growers have access to the internet, And we have conditions we call the DIV values. If it's greater than 7 for 2 days, that means the conditions are favorable for the disease. And once you alternate fungicides with different modes of action, you will have effective leaf spot control. Some growers were only using one application. We always told them that if you're going to use one application, do not use the same chemistry back to back, or else that deer too will develop or result in resistance. And always to scout your fields for leaf spot symptoms. If they did that, they will have these fungicides remaining effective for a long time. How did we disseminate this information? We did plot demonstrations. We had the annual sugar beet production guide. This is a little Bible that all our growers have, they use. We have grower seminar in all the areas where growers meet every winter. That's what we do during our long, cold winter. Circulars and bulletins, lots of telephone calls. In July, August, and September, growers will be calling. Sometimes they know what they have to do, but they like that reassurance. Should I be applying fungicide, yes or no? Face-to-face meeting, research and extension reports. Now, our growers are so good that they're willing to fund this research. They fund all of my research and extension programs, and they are very quick at adopting it. We also like to, you have here, you have about 7 different media that I've used, but I like to use as many as possible and then to repeat it as much as possible. All of their information is available on the internet, on the radio, and our youths like to use MP3 players, so we also have that available there. This is a picture of crop demonstrations. All the growers are invited to see. Seeing is believing, so they like to come to the research plots and see what's happening. This here, though, is usually in August or September. We tell them what they see here will be provided to them in January after we will have crunched the data. So we provide growers meeting and all the research that these growers fund come to them in hard copies of the research and extension report as well as an electronic copy. So if you go to the website, www.sbreb.org, you will find all of this information here. We use the internet. All of the information is the internet. We have a radio program. You can look here. The topic schedule for the duration of the crop is there. The radio stations, but both in North Dakota and Minnesota, you have about 10 radio stations. And it's in a format that if you want to, you can download it. Because if you have to listen to radio, unless you're a grower out in the field, listening to a popular radio station, and most of the radio stations will have that information, it will only be about 2 minutes. The strategy of having a successful radio program is to make it something that is important to the grower at that specific time. So let's say it's leaf spot, you're telling them about leaf spot at a particular time. I'm the person who speaks about that, about 2 minutes, and that's about all that they need. They can always go back if they miss that particular program and go to this website and download this program here to listen to it anytime or later at the end of the season and kind of compare the recommendation to see if that was effective at that particular time. Or the youth, if they want an MP3 player download, they can also have that. I will conclude by saying that between 1999 to 2009, there were no reported problems with cost per leaf spot. Remember I said in 1998 they had an epidemic. They lost $75 million. They spent 38 additional million dollars in fungicides, but it didn't work. The percentage of growers who reported leaf spot as a major problem dropped from 36% to less than 1% in 2009. How do we know that? Every year, every single grower gets a survey, sends it back to us, tell us what their problems are. So the researchers focus on their problem, not what we as researchers think is important. The average number of applications was reduced from 3.74 to 1.5. And this could probably go down a little bit lower because some people were using fungicides just for plant health benefit. 98% of those growers who use fungicides said they had good or excellent control. And the high adoption of the resource-based recommendation, of course, we use all the different media available to disseminate that information. As I said, all of this information that we provide are available at our website, www.sbreb.org. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'll be willing to answer.
Okay, time for one question.
Thank you.